Hey everyone, and welcome to this special Snake Oilers edition of the Risky Business Podcast. My name's Patrick Gray. For those of you who are looking for the regular weekly news-focused edition of the show, just scroll back to the previous episode in your podcast feed. This is Snake Oilers, a podcast series we do here at Risky Biz HQ a couple of times a year, where we get vendors along to pitch their stuff. Now, Snake Oilers is a wholly sponsored podcast series, which means everyone you hear in one of these editions of the show paid to be here. But yeah, we got three absolutely fantastic pitches for you in this edition of Oilers. We'll be hearing from Datadog. They'll be talking about their full stack security solutions, which is pretty marketing buzzwordy, but also they have actually launched some pretty cool stuff that does look kind of full stacky, right? So, we're talking about unifying everything from in-app APM style security monitoring to infrastructure monitoring agents. So Datadog is doing a huge push into security, and Datadog's very own Pierre Betoine will be along a little bit later on to talk through all of that. We're also going to hear from Matt Hastings from Red Canary in this edition. Red Canary is a managed detection and response firm that sort of stands apart from the pack, really. I've got to be honest. They're less of the outsource your monitoring to us to check a compliance tick box, and more a really sharp team of people who spend a lot of time building detections for their customers. And as you'll hear, they haven't just taken the approach of sitting a million people down in a giant SOC to just view events. They're building their own automation and tools that they use to deliver a sharper than usual service to their customers. But first up, in this edition of the Snake Oilers podcast, we are going to hear from Mike Wiasek. He'll be joining us today to talk through his new startup, Stairwell. So Stairwell is actually a very, very cool idea. One of those things that after you've seen it, you think, why didn't anyone really do this in the same way before? It's a platform for doing analysis on the files present in your organization. I joked with him that he should have called it File Explorer. Basically every new file that comes into your organization gets forwarded into a repository, which also keeps a record of which endpoints the files are present on and when they were there. I'm going to leave the intro to this segment quite short because Mike actually explains it best. So here is Mike Wiasek talking about his new thing, Stairwell.
Maybe I'm a big fan of like starting with why. Why did we build this? And I think the best way to think about that is when I was running Google's threat analysis group and then doing all the work at Chronicle prior to Stairwell, there's something I've always wanted to try and enable better threat intelligence, better detection, better response. And it was, I wanted the files that are actually on machines. I wanted copies of all the drivers and all the executable code and all of this type of stuff. And I never had it.
Yeah.
So
it was spread out everywhere in every little crevice of everything. Yeah, exactly.
And when we've talked with people who have done incident response work and we've talked with people who do this stuff, they're always like, man, if only I had fill in the blank. And so Inception is an attempt to fill in the blank. What we do is we kind of treat every piece of executable code on a system as potentially malicious, or at least very suspect. And so in that sense, we kind of build for each customer what we call like a virtual evidence locker, where we collect every file and we store it. You know, we don't necessarily know if it's good or bad today, but we know which machines in a particular enterprise have a file, when it showed up, when it was last seen, as well as having the raw bytes of that file, which allows us to do a lot of interesting server-side based processing of that. So,
and obviously you don't store duplicates, right? Like it's just a copy of every unique executable file that's in your environment.
Yep, one copy of every unique executable. We make each enterprise basically upload each copy themselves. So for example, you have two customers, but both have Windows 10 deployments and they both have a copy of calc.exe. They both end up uploading the same copy of it to prove that they actually have possession of it, because we do not allow, you know, anything to leak between customers like that.
Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense. You want to make sure that calc.exe is in fact calc.exe, right? Because that's, yeah. So why don't you walk the listeners through why it would be useful to have this corpus of every executable file from their environment sort of stored in a centralized place?
Yeah. So let's think about something that happened within the last year, like the SolarWinds hack. when FireEye Mandiant discovered that they were breached by this, right? They released originally a list of Yara signatures that matched their red team tools, which is what they reported believed to be have been stolen first. And then they turned around and they started talking about Sunburst, and they released Yara signatures for that. And so you suddenly had, you know, I think the number is 18,000 potential compromised enterprises due to that that whole supply chain attack. And FireEye released a whole bunch of Yara signatures to detect the Sunburst implants. With Inception, what was a really hard job becomes instantaneous. You can come over to Inception, add those Yara signatures into the platform, hit a button, and then come back with a list of which machines had the infected files on them, when they were there. You have a copy of those files. And the key part here is those machines may not be actively compromised any longer. Like they were compromised, but they're not now. Because we keep that virtual evidence locker, you have an idea of what did each one of your assets, as we call them, in your environment look like at any given point in time, what files were there. And when you think about the ability to deploy your signatures and scan not just what is on a machine, but what was on a machine, it creates what we like to call ongoing operational integrity. I know, based on all the available threat intel and IOCs and stuff that we have today, none of that has ever impacted my environment. And if it did impact your environment, when it happened, so you can understand, you know, what logs you might need to go back and do a larger investigation analysis for.
Now, I mean, the thing that occurred to me during the demo, right? A couple of things occurred to me watching you demo this a few weeks ago. One was, first of all, like, yeah, good idea, right? Which is because it's simple, right? Like a lot of the good ideas are very simple. So I thought, yeah, good, simple idea. The other thing though was it just was so reminiscent of like a few years ago when like NDR started getting serious. It feels like sort of NDR for files, right? It's that, you know, and all the NDR vendors like coincidentally sort of arrived at the same key selling point. They talk about how NDR information is like ground truth, right? For a network. Mm-hmm. And this feels like that, but for files on endpoints, which, you know, just from a real basic building blocks of threat hunt and response, I mean, this feels like the sort of stuff that you need, much like, you know, a bunch of network logs and metadata that you can slice and dice using, you know, some pretty established workflows. I mean, that's the thinking here, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, I think the key part is, right, like we like to talk about inside-out security, where the most interesting parts of threat hunting and analysis are actually what's on your machine. Right, like security teams, we spend a lot of time thinking about what's this feed say? What do I have in VirusTotal or various malware environments that I can go look at? But the place where we sometimes have the least visibility is actually what's happening on the computer sitting next to me. If I was in an office, that would make more sense. But as I'm working at home, actually, there are computers sitting next to me, so it's fair. Yeah. But like, in an enterprise, that's often where you have the least visibility in terms of, you know, what are the strange behaviors, what's associated with this file. And we're trying to bring that visibility into an environment where we can then do things with it, where we can study it, we can evaluate it against, you know, new and emerging threat intelligence or existing threat intelligence and understand, does something look to be good or bad? And once you bridge that, once you jump that gap, you realize you have a platform that allows things to happen at the threat intel stage. You can develop your own threat intelligence, if you will, or you can do detection. You can if you have things you're looking for, Yara signatures or indicators, you can compare that against your corpus. And then if you're in the response stage where you find something, you can say, hey, we have something that looks bad on John's Windows 7 PC. But then you can also say, well, what else was strange on that machine around that same point in time? Were there any other files that look weird? And if those files look weird, what other machines had those? And you can actually start going and exploring, you know, using heuristics like that across your environment, what should or shouldn't be there. And you can start finding really interesting stuff very quickly.
Now, you did sort of mention this earlier that, you know, you're working with EDRs and whatnot in terms of capturing this information. How are you? And you also mentioned a file forwarder, which sounds suspiciously like an agent that you don't want to call an agent. How are you actually ingesting this information? Like, what does the instrumentation side of this look like? How are you capturing that information that you can pull into this central corpus to do stuff with?
So right now, one of the things that we try to settle on is like a matter of principle for the whole platform is that it should be API driven. So in some sense, when you look at our web UI, It's driven by the same API that's available to a customer to be able to use and leverage and deploy. We have a command line tool written in Go, which if people have used stuff like the gcloud command line tool for Windows, Mac, Linux, et cetera, it has the same basic things there. So you can, you know, provision a new machine, you can upload YARA signatures, you can edit YARA signatures, you can do a lot of these capabilities from a command line tool as well. Just because, you know, I'm nerdy and I tend to prefer a command line more than a web browser more often than not. But, you know, when you talk about file upload API and stuff like that, that's all baked into that. So As we work with our early design partners, we've actually run the gamut. You know, we have an easy out of the box integration option with like Carbon Black Cloud. They have a feature called the Universal Binary Store, and we can use that for the customers who use that particular EDR to be able to collect files from machines, report in. And in that case, it's almost like a half hour rollout deployment. Yeah. An enterprise can use that and be online very quickly. Some people don't have that. And we wanted to make sure we have something covered there. So we did build a file forwarder.
you mean an agent. I'm going to make you say it.
Kind of an agent. The key thing why, you know, I think agent often is it's an overloaded term, right? Because I think when you install a typical, what we think of like an AV agent, it's a very big process.
And this is just a file forwarder. It's a very, very, yeah. You could basically script this really, couldn't you?
Yes. Yeah. You could. In fact, our prototype agent, if you will, our prototype agent was just using PowerShell to do this work. And it used our command line tool to actually upload files. But as a proof of concept, to actually show you how lightweight this could be, it worked. And it actually showed people what was possible with very, very minimal overhead on a machine.
Now, we're kind of running up against time. But one thing that you demoed to me that I wanted you to describe for the audience is actually the malware visualization stuff. Because that was, I don't know, because I don't work in response. I don't know how like useful this is versus a cool party trick, but like as a party trick, I rate it. So tell us what it is.
Yeah, no, it's basically viewing the contents of a file as like a structured image. And when you look at that, you can look at, you know, 5-6 files or even more than that. When you look at them, you very quickly, it's almost, Sesame Street in Australia, if there's an equivalent offering of the show there.
But we speak English. So, I mean, we can understand simplified American English. So, yeah, we grew up with Sesame Street.
But there,
it's
I
good
remember
for kids. American English, yeah. Great for kids. Yeah.
I remember in the 80s, they would have four pictures on the TV and there'd be like, you know, a baseball, tennis ball, bowling ball, and a brick. And it would be which one of these is not like the other. When you can reduce the almost malware analysis or at least comparing files to that level, it gives you a really quick visualization opportunity to say like, oh, wow, these all look the same. This one doesn't. And when you can key that off of a particular host name or a particular signature match, you can see how closely those samples, those objects look to each other and allow you to like tune or narrow your investigation without having to pull out IDAPRO or Ghidra or something like that.
Okay, so the visualization thing, I mean, that's just, you know, it can be a bit of a time saver, you know, nice thing to have during the workflow. But like one thing that I'd like you to quickly describe is how you can actually, you know, use Stairwell to sort of extract other IOCs. Right through these workflows. Can you just tell us that a little bit about that?
Yeah, we talked about how Inception can be a detection and response platform, but it also does threat hunting as well as intelligence production. So when you write a YARA signature and you put it in Inception, not only are you scanning all of the aggregate files that you've ever uploaded to the platform, you can go in and turn on different malware feeds. So for example, in our demo instance, we have like Malwarebazaar, VirusShare, Malshare, and several others in there. And when you look at the hits on a YARA signature, you see the files that match those signatures across your own environment, but then also across those others. And while your files may not be in your environment, but they're in the outside feeds, we can now extract IOCs from those other feeds and send them off to your detection teams as well. So by deploying a YARA signature, you're producing, you know, homegrown threat intelligence.
And then this is why I keep going back to that NDR thing, right? Like it's like NDR, but for files. And can you imagine like this on one box, on one screen, right? And then your NDR console on the other, flip back and forward. I mean, you know, you've got Like that's the power.
All the visibility.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Mike Wiasek, thank you so much for joining us to do your first big pitch on Stairwell. We're honored to host that. The product is called Inception. But yeah, it's all really interesting stuff, and I wish you all the best of luck with it. Cheers.
Thank you so much.
That was Mike Wiasek from Stairwell there, and you can find them at stairwell.com, stairwell.com. And yeah, as I say, I've seen a demo of Stairwell, and it really is reminiscent of like NDR tools, but for files instead of network metadata. So do go check that one out. Okay, next up, we're going to hear from Matt Hastings from Red Canary. Red Canary is a managed detection and response, or MDR, company, which obviously they do managed detection and response. You plumb through your telemetry, network and endpoint, and whatever else makes sense, and they catch the bad stuff for you. Now, I can't actually think of a more recognizable brand in this space than Red Canary. They're not like the outsourced SOC style of MDR that we often see in this industry. They're sort of a bigger brand than that. They're like a real player in the industry. And by the sounds of things, they have quite a few cool tricks up their sleeves. Now, they do sell to organizations of different sizes, but I wanted to focus this interview on large enterprise, which is, you know, a significant part of their business, because I found it interesting that large enterprise is actually an MDR customer, right, with Red Canary, because they usually have their own security teams and maybe even a SOC. So I guess the question that I had was, why outsource your MDR to a third party if you're already a big company? So Matt Hastings has an answer for that, and here he is with that answer.
Probably a couple of reasons. The first is that, you know, large enterprises and SOCs are not immune to the same problems as everyone else, which is they are inundated with alerts and telemetry from their various security technologies. Red Canary reduces that by 90%. And so when you get something from us, you know it's real and it needs to be investigated. And what that allows our enterprise customers to really do is focus on the problems that are specific to their business that no third party could ever help them achieve. And so they rely on us to really catch all the tier one and tier two things that are going on and leave the tip of the spear environment specific work to themselves.
It's funny, right? Because when we were chatting before we started recording, you made a very good point to me, which is that one of the reasons large enterprise is turning to managed detection and response is because staff retention is so hard and there's churn, right? So keeping that expertise in the SOC to fulfill that function is actually quite difficult.
We hear it all the time. You know, folks will get hired, they'll get trained up, they'll be put in a seat, and then they'll be offered, you know, $5,000, $10,000 more to go work down the street, and they'll go to do that. And ultimately, it's just a constant scramble to hire and train enough staff, and they're still behind. And attackers don't have this problem. And so when you look at Red Canary as, you know, your security ally, someone who's going to help you through this process, we can do all of the tier one and tier two investigative work for you. And by the time you have a detection, we give that to you. We then work with you through the incident up until the point that you remediate and you're back on your feet moving forward.
So let's talk more in depth about what the service actually looks like, because you're saying, okay, well, we cut out the noise by like 90%. So it's only so managed, right? Like what does your output look like? You know, what are people getting? Are they just getting a much cleaner feed of what's happening in their environment? How active is Red Canary in doing the actual, you know, basic remediation of malware infections and stuff? Like, walk us through exactly what it is that you deliver.
Yeah, I would say the first thing that we deliver are custom-based detections on our own threat intelligence. And what distinguishes Red Canary here, and I know you're going to hear this from a number of other vendors, but here I do believe there's a distinction and a difference, is our indicators are all behavioral based. We're not basing them on rigid or overly specific indicators. They're all patterns of attack. Because of the fact that we have analysts, we have people reviewing them, we can have a broader based net to cast to actually detect malicious activity that you wouldn't necessarily have a specific indicator to detect. I can give you a quick proof point story on there, that one, if you're interested.
Sure.
So if you remember, you know, earlier in the summer here in the United States, there was a certain supply chain ransomware attack that took place right before a major holiday here. You probably know the one I'm talking about because I've heard you talk about it a few times on the podcast.
Why, is there some sort of contractual thing that prevents you from being able to say SolarWinds?
No, in this case, I'm talking Kaseya. We just weren't going to say it. So a couple of our behavioral indicators identified some suspicious activity at a few customers. Our detection engineers, who are the folks at Red Canary, who write our detectors and ultimately investigate the things that they find, triage the alerts, determined that they were actually malicious and that something was going on. This is a full hour before we started seeing some of the initial chatter on things like Twitter and Reddit saying like, hey, something big here is going on. So at this point at Red Canary, kind of two things took place. The first is that our incident handlers, who are our customer-facing folks who work with our customers when a detection takes place, immediately reached out to the impacted customers to say, hey, we identified ransomware. It's time that we take action on it. You can do that in either an automated or manual way within Red Canary to clean this up, to make sure that they were fine. But we still have hundreds of other customers who could be impacted, and it's possible we're just seeing the first part of it. So folks like our intel teams, our detection engineers, and our research folks immediately started digging into the data to figure out, hey, where is this coming from? What's going on? And about 6 hours after we initially found it, we ended up publishing a detection brief to all of our customers, letting them know what was going on, letting them know that we had coverage for them, and letting them know that we would let them know immediately if we found anything, and then let them know that they could have a nice 4th of July holiday.
Oh, there's the kicker, isn't it? That belongs on the slide deck, which is enjoy your beer and burned meats on July 4. That should be a t-shirt. Look, one thing I want to discuss here is managed security providers generally had a bad rap, right? And still do. Like, as a wider segment of the industry, they still do kind of have a bad rap. And this is because quite often the spend to an MSP was driven by compliance, right? So people were looking to check a box, which meant the work always went to the low-cost bidder. And you just wound up with these sprawling companies that did the bare minimum, right, for their clients so that they could check the box and say, yes, we monitor, yes, we do this, yes, we do that. So things like managed firewall, managed patching, managed monitoring. Red Canary certainly doesn't have a bad reputation like that. I mean, it's a fairly major brand, certainly has a different vibe about it than, you know, Bob's managed SOC. But like, how often do you come up against that in talking to customers? Like, is there still a trust issue around outsourcing this sort of stuff to MDR companies like yours?
You know, our community team and our outreach team has done a great job of establishing the Red Canary brand. And you've talked about this already. So a lot of times when customers come to talk to us, they already have an idea of what we do and why it's valuable to them. You know, that being said, you know, we certainly are what I'll say opinionated in how we approach security problems and offer security products. And we are very much opinionated that we won't touch something unless we think we can make it valuable. And so that's why you'll see Red Canary not produce products like some of the traditional MSSs that you just mentioned. You know, that being said, you know, one of the things we're very proud of, and this is absolutely a statement that, you know, is one of those days since last accident that gets erased down to zero, is no Red Canary customer has ever had to hire an outside incident response firm after being breached. Not to say that Red Canary customers don't get breached, that happens all the time, but when we work with them, they're able to investigate, remediate, and ultimately recover from incidents without having to go to another party.
They can contain them before it turns into a full domain admin compromise, I think is what you're getting at there.
Exactly. You know, we work very quickly and very thoroughly with our customers to make sure that they have everything they need to do things themselves.
So let's talk a little bit about the technologies you support, because Red Canary has always had a very strong association with Carbon Black. And I understand that in the early days, essentially, you were a, you know, Carbon Black monitoring company. That's no longer the case, right? We're talking ancient history there. But like, what sort of technologies do you rely on to offer your services?
Yeah, I'd say our technology kind of falls into three different buckets. And like you said, you know, we have a long and still current relationship with Carbon Black. But when you think about, you know, what I'll call the traditional endpoints, and these are your workstations and your servers, you know, our support today spans from Carbon Black, we have CrowdStrike, we have Microsoft ATP, we have SentinelOne, and a few others that are all supported as part of our MDR product offering. Additionally, we also have cloud workload protection or infrastructure. So these are things like your runtime containers or your production Linux servers. And finally, we have general purpose security alerts coming from your expanded tech stack. So this could be things like identity-based alerts. This could be things like network-based security alerts. All of those can be fed into the Red Canary security operations platform and then acted upon.
Now, earlier you said that you know, trying to do this yourself isn't cost effective, right? Now, I know that services like Red Canaries, it's not like this is cheap, right? Like, this isn't cheap stuff. This is, you know, an exercise that's going to eat a little bit of budget, outsourcing, you know, MDR. Why don't you walk us through the economics, right? Because you're saying that it works out better on the budget sheet than do it yourself. How is that possible?
You know, it probably starts with the infrastructure required to even build a custom-based detection engine. And so if we're saying, you know, one of the primary value adds of Red Canary is how we do custom detections, just building that yourself is hundreds of hours, if not thousands of hours of investment into infrastructure. It's also potentially millions of dollars of investment into technology to store, process this data. You get that out of the box. The second is the efficiency gains with all of your employees. So you're now not spending, you know, hours and hours churning through false positives alerts. You're only acting on the things that actually matter. And then third, like I said, you don't have to worry about the onboarding, training, and ultimately retaining of staff that might turn over. You can focus those folks on things that are more motivating to them and focus them on more, you know, environmentally specific problems that otherwise, you know, might not be addressed.
See, for me, one of the best selling points for a MDR company is that they have access to telemetry from inside multiple networks, right? This is the thing that I've always liked, because if you see an alert, like say I'm sitting in a SOC working at my company, right? And I see an alert, I can only investigate that and see what else has happened on my network. Whereas if I work for an MDR company like yours, I can see an alert at customer A and then go, well, am I seeing this at customers, you know, B through Z? And that's, you know, that's an interesting thing. I mean, how often does it work out that way that early on in your investigations, when looking at an alert, you'll actually start running it across multiple customer data sets?
It's all the time. I mean, our technology is built to do this exact thing. So we know when a detector fires, how else it's being fired upon, how often it fires, where it fires, its typical fidelity. So we have all of that built in. And then quickly we can start seeing, does this exist other places? Do we need to go investigate this? Or is this likely a false positive? 100%, that is absolutely a huge value for anyone choosing MDR.
So this is an odd question that I never asked this of a products company, but because you're a managed service, I'm curious what your headcount is these days at Red Canary, ballpark.
Yeah, I would actually push back on managed service a bit. Like, a lot of our product is delivered through code. You know, we are tripling our engineering bandwidth this year because we're pushing more and more of our technology away from human fingertips and keyboards into software itself. And so because of that, we're able to, you know, scale well beyond, you know, what other, what I'll call traditional MSS vendors have been able to do.
So less 1,000 monkeys at 1,000 typewriters and more trying to automate as much as possible and do the tuning centrally across multiple customer tenants. I mean, that makes sense.
Exactly. And so we made that investment earlier this year. We've been, you know, like crazily ramping up engineers so that we can scale ourselves up to, you know, we want to have 2,000 customers here in a couple of years.
How many have you got now?
Not quite that many.
always fishing for the info. All right. Well, Matt Hastings, thank you very much for coming along to give us a cogent pitch on your MDR, right? Which is interesting because it does sound like really a big emphasis is creating the technology, you know, within the company so that you don't need as many people. So it's not like some giant outsourced traditional SOC. It is a point of difference. It's been very interesting talking to you. Thanks again.
Appreciate it, Patrick. Thank you.
That was Matt Hastings from Red Canary there. Big thanks to him for that. And you can find them at redcanary.com. It is time for our third and final snake oiler now, and we're going to be hearing from Pierre Betoine, a vice president of product management at Datadog. And yeah, I actually really, really enjoyed this conversation. Pierre worked on Apple's Red Team. I think he ran Apple's Red Team for a long time before he wound up founding a company called Screen, which is Screen. And that company in turn was acquired by Datadog. So Screen did like RASP style security monitoring of web applications. So, you know, you can see why Datadog bought them. It was kind of a natural fit because they can just bundle it up into their application performance monitoring stuff and, you know, get an easy win that way. So yeah, Pierre and I started off by talking about Screen and how it found a home at Datadog, but then spoke about their broader offering, which actually sounds like it'll be really, really useful in the right shops. So here's Pierre, who started off with a brief history of Screen.
So we built Skrill in 2015 with my co-founder, JB. We were previously working at Apple. I was in charge of the red team, the first red team. And so Skrill was like an application security platform where you could install one library in an application, an API, web service, website, whatever. And we were monitoring and reporting the anomalies at runtime. And we were also blocking the malicious activity. So we had like a deep vision inside the application at the network level, authentication level. We had the stack trace, the exception. So it's not like working at the network level. It's working across the stack. So we could have like a broader visibility inside the application. Pretty much like an APM, you know, the application performance management systems like Datadog today, but for security.
So now you've been acquired by Datadog, right? And they've taken your baby in. And what have they done with it?
So the rationale of the acquisition made a lot of sense when you look at this under like the APM spectrum, like the lens of the APM. Basically, we are an extension of the APM. So you install today a library, a Datadog library in the application, and instantly you can see your monitoring analytics. You can see the where the application is slow, how to fix it, and so on. And we are basically an extension of that. Of that capability, and you can now detect the threats, you can see the security activity and how it actually affects the application. So not only the threats that the people are attacking, but also the impact, the potential impact on the application, the anomalies, and so on.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense, right, to do that sort of include. I mean, from Datadog's perspective, that's what they were already doing, right? So it's just more stuff to throw in there.
Yeah, absolutely. We have thousands of customers, happy customers who are using the APM today. I think we have more than 6,000 customers on the APM to date. And so this is a new set of capabilities that you can get without having to deploy a new agent or a new library. So there is no friction to security for the existing customer because everything is already everything is already in place.
All right. So what do you actually get when you roll this thing out into your applications? What sort of, I mean, because I'd imagine you're going to see some stuff that you're not going to see at the network level, right? Like it's, you know, there's going to be certain things that you can do once you're in there, so to speak. So, you know, what are the key benefits?
Yeah. You know, one of the big problem of application security in production is the noise and the amount of traffic that you're going to get. All the bots, you know, all the automated activity that you're going to see, but you have no way to know if something wrong happened in the application. So you're going to see like millions of events, and it's extremely hard to know what's relevant and what's not. So basically what we get is the view inside the application. So not only the threats outside that you could see with WAF or like with different systems, but also what happens inside the application. So we have access to the stack trace, we have access to the logs, to the authentication. We can see the business logic, so the database access, everything, and we can correlate the threat activity with the anomalies inside the application. So in a very quick, just instantly, we can know if something happens or if it's just a 404, like something that didn't trigger anything in the application, and you don't need to spend time on that type of activity.
So what sort of organizations are actually embracing this, right? Like what sort of orgs are actually using this stuff? Because I'd imagine like with Datadog, it's going to be the more DevOps-y, you know, modern shops, right? Rather than the traditional enterprise doing it the, you know, the tried and stayed old school way.
Yeah, we had different types of customers. We had the commercial customers, so the small and the small customers and the mid market ones, where they wanted to have like a broad coverage in a very short amount of time. So basically, you just had to install a library, and you had 70% or 80% of your AppSec needs covered by Skrill. And then we had the enterprise, so the larger customers, and here like we had two main reasons. One was being able to filter the noise, so focus on the real activity that can impact your system. And the second one was collaboration between teams. And you know, how can you make DevOps and Sec teams work together? You can make them work together when you share the same data set, when you share the same information, and then you can work on the same things together. So these were like the two main use cases we had on the enterprise side. On the commercial, it was really like peace of mind and like making sure that 70% of your needs are covered very quickly.
It's interesting. Before we got recording, I mentioned to you that the story here reminds me a little bit about ExtraHop, right? In the sense that, I mean, a completely different product, but in the sense that it was a network product that did a lot of sort of visibility and analysis more from a application performance monitoring perspective and a network performance monitoring perspective. And then they started building out those use cases. So now at a lot of organizations, you've got the network teams and the security teams both using that product. I'd imagine that, you know, here, if you're talking about DevOps, you know, with security, like that crossover is really useful, right? Like in the same way, maybe even a little bit more.
Yeah, and you think, you know, I think the it's extremely hard to do on the other side, because when you start with security team, convincing DevOps teams to install agents, libraries everywhere is usually tough. And so
unless it's giving them something, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So you need to find like a value proposition for both teams. And the thing is today, like the DevOps teams love to use Datadog every day. Like they love the product. They are already using the product to build reliable and performant applications. So it's an extension of the use cases on the right, so to the security teams. And I think it makes a lot of sense in that sense, in that direction, because we already have everything installed. All the capabilities are here in place to add the security capabilities.
Now, are people using this in place of a WAF or in addition to a WAF?
No, in addition to a WAF. So WAF is still a very good solution at the perimeter. It will filter the noise and so on, but it's... when you have like broad infrastructures with hundreds or thousands of applications, you need to have more visibility than just the perimeter. And so you don't throw your WAF, you basically use that in addition of the WAF.
Yeah.
It's very similar to APM. And, we used to monitor the peaks of latencies at the perimeter. And we needed to go deeper and to have more visibility into the slow queries and so on. So you still need to see like the peaks of latency whenever something is unusual, but you also need to break it down to the exact line of code or like the slow query that triggered that problem at the perimeter.
Now, I mean, I went to Datadog's website earlier, just doing a bit of research in preparation for this interview, and Datadog is pushing security really hard. Right? Like this is all over the front page. So the question is, like, is this now rolled into the core product, or is this something that existing customers will pay extra for? Like, how's that part of it working?
So yeah, it's part of the same platform. We have one platform. We love to say that we have one product, one platform. But the thing is, you start with a set of problems that you have, and we are here to solve them. So we broke down the offering into different products. So today we started with the cloud SIEM security monitoring, which is called security monitoring, and we here collect all the logs, we enrich them, and we provide you with detection capabilities, investigation capabilities, and so on. We have the AppSec product, which is being resurfaced. So it was screened basically, that is becoming Datadog AppSec. And we have the CWS product, so Cloud Workload Security, which is monitoring the host and like the containers at the infrastructure level. And we also recently released our CSPM product, so more oriented towards risk compliance, which is monitoring the misconfiguration. And so it's acting more at the cloud provider level for now.
Yeah, we had one of your team on talking just about that stuff actually a while ago, just talking about the spotting misconfigurations, which is amazing how many people still get into trouble with that.
Yeah. I think it's extremely hard to be aligned with what you really wanted to have. And if you compare like the what you have in production and what you want to have in production today, there is still like a bit of distance between both.
So, I mean, how much of the time spent looking at these security events and whatnot is actually the security people versus the DevOps teams? I mean, have you observed that this product is more popular with one side or the other at this point, or it's still too early to say, or it's a pretty even split?
Yeah, it's still quite early to say, to be honest. Like we wanted to have a broad offering, to start with a broad offering. So as you can see, we said CWS, AppSec, CSPM, our cloud SIEM, we have like a broad set of products, but now we are really working on like figuring out who is using the product, how they want to consume it, who is being added in the organizations. Like we are discovering, and it's a bit too early to say at this stage.
Now, this is a question I sometimes like to ask. Can you walk us through like something that you caught in the wild, some sort of attack that was like a good one that you managed to surface through the product? Because I'm guessing, you know, you would have seen a few by now.
Yeah, for sure. So if I focus on the AppSec side, I think the ones that we would spot directly would be like SQL injections, cross-site scripting, and so on. And so the way we do that is completely different. We don't just check for specific patterns that you have in a base of signature. We actually detect the behavior at the SQL driver level. So we can monitor every single SQL query which is performed, and we can detect if some of the user inputs are modifying the structure of the query. So it's very deep. It's actually,
when you're actually looking at the queries going to the database, yeah, that's pretty deep. I'll give you that.
Yeah, absolutely. and you can't find like legitimate use cases where like a user input is modifying the structure of a SQL query. So this ability to have like a deep visibility, high quality visibility inside the applications allow you to change the way you detect the problems.
And are you doing blocking on that stuff, or is it just alerting at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. We also block. So we basically block the runtime. So whenever we detect like a potential problem at the SQL driver level, we would just block the request, and we will report all the details inside the application to help the DevOps teams fix the problem. So we'll report the stack trace, we'll report like the runtime context, so you can quickly jump on the line of code and fix it. So we have different sets of vulnerabilities being covered, from the cross-site scripting, SQL injection. So we cover like the OWASP top 10 spectrum. And we also monitor the business logic.
So how are you doing the business logic stuff? Because I know how others are doing it, which is you sort of have like they kind of have templates for traditional, you know, for basic logics like password reset flows and whatever. So they can kind of spot when things go out of state. Are you using that kind of approach?
Yeah. So the first thing is we add a layer of authentication, so you can correlate not only the IPs and like the actors which are attacking the applications, but also like the user accounts and so on. So it gives you like a new layer of information, which is very useful to see if people are indeed like trying to reset the passwords, or like trying to brute force, or like different types of threats of that kind. But you can also see the malicious activity on the runtime itself. So if you, for instance, start to call specific routes in an unusual way, or if you start to have a sequence of execution which are going out of the usual patterns, that's the kind of things you can monitor if you add the authentication layer, the information at the authentication layers. Basically, what we try to do if we zoom out is really to monitor the services and the applications across the stack. That's why we started with CWS at the host and container level. We have the AppSec, Datadog AppSec product now, which also had the application security layer.
And, I'm not going to lie, right? When your marketing people are like, yeah, you're going to talk to him about, you know, maintaining DevOps security across the full stack, I'm like, geez, that's a lot, you know, that's a lot of buzzwords. But I can kind of see that. Yeah, I mean, you actually do have full stack visibility. So
well done.
All right, Pierre Bitoine, thank you so much for joining us on Snake Oilers to talk through Datadog's, I guess, big push into security, right? Doing it in an interesting way. I've always kind of liked this embedded, you know, library approach and stuff, like grabbing SQL queries from the actual driver. Like, I can dig it, man. I think it's cool. And I wish you all the best with it. Thanks a lot for joining us again. Cheers.
Thank you very much, Patrick. Bye-bye.
That was Pierre Bitoine there from Datadog with a discussion about their full stack security solution. And yeah, you can find them at datadog.com. And, they've set up one of those special tracking URLs that you can find on our website if you want to click through from there. But yeah, that is it for this edition of Oilers. And I'm going to kind of break the fourth wall for a moment and tell you all, I actually do really enjoy doing these, but they are so much work. The next one will be published in April next year. And yeah, that is sweet, sweet relief, because there's a lot of sort of planning and coordination. Everything from when someone first comes in and says they want to do one of these, you know, going from there to actually the final product. It is it's a lot of work. But I will be back next week with more security news and analysis. But until then, I've been Patrick Gray. Thanks for listening.